Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by LegalZoom. LegalZoom's helped more than a million people with DBAs, LLCs, incorporation, and more. Visit LegalZoom.com and enter AAA at checkout for special savings. And by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. See what's on the menu this week and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/allaboutandroid. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job boards, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/twit. Another episode of All About Android. This is episode number 321, recorded on Tuesday, June 6th, 2017. We're your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
I'm Ron Richards.
How's it going, Ron?
I'm doing well, Jason. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. We are sans Flo today.
We are flowless, as she is enjoying a lovely vacation, and she deserves it.
Yes, so. Well-deserved. So yep. in Flo's absence, we have Flo's ex-coworker. I don't know how it worked out this way. The plan was to get Derek on with Flo, but we have Derek Walter, who is a freelance writer, founder of Walter Media. Also, I didn't know this about you, Derek. Author of Learning MIT App Inventor. How's it going, Derek? It's good to have you.
Great. Excellent. Really glad to be here.
It's great to have you on. I didn't know that you wrote a book about MIT App Inventor. What inspired you to do that?
Well, I got involved with a little background on App Inventor. It was first developed by Google as this really user-friendly way to build Android apps. And then it got open sourced and MIT took it over. And they use it in a lot of college classrooms, high school, even some like junior high, elementary level as a way to get kids interested in computer science and app development. And so I got connected with them and was able to put a book together. And it's been being used in education in a lot of different places. And it's a great way to get kids interested in app development and in kind of the customization and what you can do with Android. So it was a fun project and was glad to be a part of it.
Yeah, it's cool. I was happy to see, you know, we talked about it a lot on the show in the earlier years of this show and kind of showed off bits and pieces and everything. And then when Google was kind of moving on from it, I think we were pretty happy to see that MIT was going to take it up and give it new life. And I guess that continues. It's still kind of a thing. Is it evolving at the same rate right now? Or is it kind of, I don't know, leveled out, kind of stabilized as far as like production for MIT's App Inventor?
It has a target of those who have a very minimal computer science background or those who come from a completely different field. And that was one of the reasons it appealed to me. In college, I have a humanities background. I didn't study computer science, and the way that you can use it to build apps, the drag and drop visual coding method works really well in a lot of situations. But the idea behind it is what you see in everything from Apple's Swift's Playground, if I think I have the name of that platform right, and a lot of other different learn-to-code platforms, this idea where it's very visual, it's very drag-and-drop, and it introduces those basic computer science principles. So even though App Inventor itself may not be as popular, that idea behind it has really taken hold.
That's cool. Love to see it still around. And, hey, I learned something about you. Of course, when Flo was working at Greenbot and PC World, is that right? PC World or
yes,
PC Mag? Yes,
PC World.
PC World, yeah. Yep.
I always say PC Mag, and then she gets mad at me. Yes, PC World, of course. You and Flo work together, and you're still doing freelance writing for PC World as well?
Yes, for PC World, Greenbot, Tom's Guide, number of other publications. A lot of my work is Android. Some of it is in other areas of tech, but since my time there, I've been a real Android enthusiast, and so I'd love the chance to learn more about the platform, to write about what's new and upcoming. I just did a shameless plug. I just did a piece for Tom's Guide about, you know, what I hope to see in the OnePlus 5, which should be popping up very shortly. So it's still an exciting area to cover.
Ah, cool. Well, I'll try and get that into the doc, because we will definitely be talking about the OnePlus 5, at least, you know, in advance of actual news around the OnePlus 5. But we've got a little bit of that in today's doc. We've also got an essential trademark infringement scenario kind of bubbling up right now, which is kind of funny. The end of Andromeda, so we can shed some tears about that. The Moto Z2 Play, Amazon's second chance at a smartphone. That's right, they're coming back for seconds. Maybe they can right the wrongs of the Fire Phone. And a whole lot more. Before we get into the news, should say that the developer dashboard was released. Nougat is sitting at 9.5%. So that number is getting up there, closing in on 10%.
That's pretty good. That's progress. That's
that's huge, yeah, for Android.
I really wish I always think about this after we talk about the numbers, but I want to go back to the same point in time for Marshmallow to see how it's tracking, you know, OS over OS. You know, if at this point in Marshmallow's life cycle, where it was at.
Yeah, I'm trying to see here.
But that would take a lot of work to figure out, because you got to figure out when it was released and then how many months out. I wonder if it's not exactly like year over year kind of thing.
Yeah, we have.
It would take some more work.
I've had some docs and charts shared with me by Tyler Hilliard. And I'm trying to take a look here. I'll put the link into the doc chat for you, Brian. There it is, and you can go in there and take a look at that. And it kind of shows some of the kind of the arc of some of these releases. But it's hard, like, with having not prepared myself to look at exactly what we're
looking but at according
here.
To this, if you zoom in at share since introduced, then Brian, if you can zoom in the lower left hand corner of this chart, you'll see that Nougat and Marshmallow are pretty much almost on the same trajectory.
Oh, there we go. Okay, so that's exactly the data that you're looking for.
That's exactly what I wanted to find. Yeah,
nice.
It looks like. Yeah, so that's really interesting. And so whether or not Nougat keeps that same up and to the right, you know, kind of dramatic flow that that Marshmallow has. But look how slower both Marshmallow and Nougat are in comparison to Ice Cream Sandwich, Jelly Bean, and Kit Kat, and even Lollipop. Look at that. Those are crazy numbers.
Yeah.
It's all about the first graph and the share since introduced. So while these are pretty, I think it's the first one in the lower left hand corner. That's the key for what we're talking about.
Yeah, and I'm zoomed in on that, and Marshmallow at the same time was 7.5%, Nougat, 7.1%. So
Nougat
right
forever.
On track, right?
Exactly. But if you look at where Lollipop was at the same point, Lollipop was nearly like around 20%.
Yep, 18.1%.
That's crazy.
Kit Kat 13.6, Ice Cream Sandwich 10.9%. Wow, this is a really good doc, and I'm happy that I created a tab for it, and I'm happy that you sent it in. Tyler Hilliard, thank you for doing that. We will continue to refer to that if you continue updating. It looks like he drops in the information. It's not perfectly up to date with today's distribution numbers, but definitely gives an indication based on the last distribution. So that's really great stuff. All right, without further talking, because I'm not going to say adieu, because I don't do that anymore. Jeez, I just can't get rid of it. It's time for the news, Brian.
Nougat may have 9.5% of market share, but we're giving you 100% of Android news.
That was A+. That was great, Brian. I love that one. So we're coming off of last week, the excitement of Andy Rubin and Essential being unleashed amongst the world. And a good sign to see if you're on the right track, especially in technology, is how soon after your announcement are you sued? And sure enough, Essential has got a lawsuit on their hands. So basically, the company Spigen, I don't know how to pronounce that, S-P-I-G-E-N, they have the trademark for Essential from a trademark filing of August 2016 for a range of battery packs and chargers. They've also got some Bluetooth headphones. The charge is that Essential being a smartphone company is too similar and confusing to the products that Spigen already sell. They said a cease and desist from any and all uses of marks, including the term essential. Now, Essential, the phone company, the smartphone company, had its registration of the term essential refused. And one could assume it's because of this conflict. And yet Essential moved forward anyway. and Essential, the smartphone company, says, and I don't know if these are Andy's words or not, so maybe we shouldn't do the Andy mouth. But they say, you know, threat letters are commonplace in our sector. While Spigen's or Spigen's prerogative to make assertions, Essential believes that we are without merit and will respond appropriately. So, you know, they're gonna challenge it. You gotta imagine that they knew that this would come. Like they couldn't have been surprised by this once they went live. Their lawyers must have been at the ready. So who knows? And if trademark lawsuits aren't or more boring for you, you want something more exciting, here's an actual photo of the Essential phone in real life. Not a render or not any cutesy website stuff. It's actually in Mark Gurman's hands. It exists. It's real. And yeah, it's wacky. Derek, what do you think of the Essential phone, this trademark lawsuit, as well as the phone in general?
Well, given how they reacted, it sounds like the trademark lawsuit is the modern equivalent of the first dollar bill that you put on the wall of your new store that you opened when you have your first sale. So I guess in that case, then they're glad to have it.
They're going to frame this.
Right. Yeah. Yes. In terms of the phone, at first it's easy when you cover this industry to get immune to all the hyperbole and the grand pronouncements about how everything is going to be the greatest new thing ever and it's going to change the world and this is the best phone in history. But when I looked at the details, I'm actually pretty excited for the Essential phone because it's like right at that pixel level, maybe a step above of where the hardware is really, really good and you're getting an unblemished version of Android. So I'm actually excited to see where they take it. And also, it sounds like they're not planning on that this is going to, you know, blow out the door when it comes to sales. They know that this is probably a niche market at first. It's going to be for people who want a high-end phone, who want a high-end Android phone. So given some of the things I read about it, I think that they're realistic in terms of how they're approaching the market. Some of the other essential hardware, the smart home stuff, I'm a little up in the air about. But in terms of the phone, I'm really excited to see where it goes.
Yeah, I'm curious to see the home device as well. Because, man, I mean, and then Apple has their home device. Everybody's getting on that bandwagon right now. It's going to be a crowded category here in another year.
It's been a week since the Essential announcement, and I know I was very excited last week about it.
Have you calmed down? Have you settled down a little bit?
Well, my excitement level has dropped as I'm anxiously awaiting a release date for the green color, for the ocean blue or ocean green color that they have. They still haven't announced. There's only black and white. If that fourth color was available, I think I would have put my money down on it by now. So I'm right there with you, Derek. I think this phone is I haven't spent that amount of money on a phone yet. You know, like I haven't really, you know, like I didn't pull the trigger on the Pixel. You know, my Nextbit Robin was, you know, more conservative in price, you know, and other phones that I bought have been cheaper. But like all the features, the bezel, the lack of the bezel, the full screen, kind of the just everything about it. More I look at it, the more I'm excited about it. So I hope this trademark ruling doesn't get in the way of me getting my hands on that color.
Has the notch of the front facing camera, has that like seasoned well over the past week for you?
I like it. I think it's good. It looks different. I like things that look different.
That's so true. It does look different. It just kind of looks unintentional. Like it looks, I don't know. It bothers me for whatever reason. I don't know.
Well, to me, it looks super intentional. Like they didn't want to cover the camera or not have the glass go all the way to the top. I don't know how else they could have done that though. I mean, unless you can get a camera lens that can see through the display glass, what else can you do?
That's what Andy Rubin needed to do. He failed. He dropped
now,
the
I
ball.
Now, if they were able to do one without a front-facing camera, I would have gotten that too because I've never used my front-facing camera.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I'm not a teenage girl. But.
No, no selfies, no face swapping.
No face swapping. Absolutely.
All right. Well, thankfully, there's a face swapping story, and I gave it to me because I know you're not a face swapper.
I know. I noticed that.
That's why I swap your face with apps, and you don't do
so
it for
with
yourself.
So with this trademark lawsuit, though, like all that's going to happen is they're going to settle, right? I mean, that's what else can happen?
Yeah, I mean, I have to imagine. Well, I mean, and when you're talking about trademark and this of this sort of the sort of thing that we're talking about right here, is it easy to confuse the products? Like Spigen has, you know, an essential brand. They aren't a smartphone company necessarily, but they make a lot of devices that work with smartphones. Is it easy for the general consumer to confuse the brand of Essential with, you know, that is a smartphone company, with their kind of sub-brand of Essential, which are things that you use with a smartphone? Do either of you think that that line is too similar? Like, I know in other cases this has happened. It's like, yeah, but you're clearly not in the same market, so of course they can coexist. They're totally in the same market, just different parts of it. Is that close enough, do you think?
Without having legal background, I don't want to necessarily like render a judgment on it, but I
we speculate all the time, Derek. It's okay. Welcome to the show.
All right. My suspicion is that Essential's argument is going to be that, look, I don't think that anyone is going to walk into a store and see the Essential phone and go, wait, is this an Essential Spigen device or is this Essential new Essential smartphone? I mean, yeah. It doesn't seem like something that has a lot of merit, and probably if this wasn't backed by Andy Rubin and probably some of the money he was able to get behind it, you might not have even seen this come to be. I mean, who knows? But it just sounds like one of those things that the company is just trying to protect its name, protect its interests.
Yeah.
But for the regular consumer, yeah. I doubt that it is going to actually make a difference.
I mean, if you're speaking, you have to do this, of course.
Yeah, you have to protect the trademark or you lose it, right? But Derek, I think you made a great point, though, is that it's not like anyone's going to walk into a store and mistake a Spigen case for an Essential phone because the Essential phone won't be in the store.
That's true. That's a really good point.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know how long that lasts or if they have plans to do that. But right now, that's not going to happen in a Best Buy. So,
yeah, yeah. But they, you know, they'll discuss that in the case too. What is the long term plan, and if then that happens, yep. Then what is the overlap? So we will we'll check in on that as we find out more. Of course, moving on to Andromeda, which we've talked about many times on the show. Friend of the show, Hiroshi Lockheimer, talked about Andromeda when he was on back in November. And I mean, oh hey Hiroshi, how's it going?
There is, yeah.
I didn't actually invite you back, but it's great to have you here, Hiroshi.
He's always here watching and judging. That's the good thing to know.
And his mouth is moving. It's kind of a nervous tick at this point, I think. And basically, he had said at that time, like, he had alluded to the fact that, yeah, Andromeda was not necessarily going to be a thing going forward. But you never really had any, you know, firm proof. I don't know if we're necessarily hearing from Google directly. In fact, I know we're not hearing from Google directly saying Andromeda is not happening. But Stephen Hall of 9to5 Google has a few sources now from Google who are basically saying that Andromeda was in fact shelved. Some of that work, he says, is being moved into other things, and that could include, you know, Fuchsia, which he goes on to say is Andromeda's spiritual successor, but that pieces of Andromeda are kind of falling into other efforts. Bison is a laptop that we've heard rumored about, and it was speculated that Bison would be the Andromeda launch laptop device, but that's been scrapped. Though pieces of it are being integrated potentially into another laptop Chromebook project that's still in the works. So if you had Andromeda being the be-all end-all of Android and Chrome OS merging into one on your bingo card, you can expect never to fill that space. Does this make you sad, Derek?
Tremendously. No, what it makes me think is, you know, looking at, if I'm allowed to mention this, at the Apple News this week, clearly, it seems like everyone is trying to get to this one place where you have one operating system that is omnipresent and everywhere. And Apple clearly thinks it's iOS, as they made the iPad Pro a lot closer to being a functional computer. Microsoft kind of went the other direction, trying to make Windows 10 where there's this universal Windows platform where everything can work everywhere, even though no one has Windows phones. And Google, Android is spectacularly successful, but they've been trying to bridge this gap between the Android world and Chrome, which is very successful on the desktop. So the way I see Andromeda, well, that's hard to say, and moving over to Fuchsia, or some of the work they did inspiring the work with Fuchsia, is they're trying to get to this place where they have one thing, one operating system with the power of Google and the AI that can work everywhere. And that's how I see is what they're trying to get to deep down in the caverns of the Google Labs that we're not allowed in.
Yeah, and who knows what the decisions behind the shelving of Andromeda, you know, what goes into that. Like that, you know, when we finally do hear the full story of this and what's going on with Fuchsia and what was the limitations or problems of Andromeda, I would love to be a fly on the wall in those rooms when they're trying to say, okay, what is the long-term plan? This is what we're trying to do. We've hit a roadblock. Is it best to just take the best of what we've done and apply it to this next thing, or keep banging your head against the wall trying to get one thing to work? You know, it's kind of what is the path of development around iteration and these projects? Who knows? Like, well, we may never know, but I hope that story comes out one day.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and this is Google. They've got a million different projects happening all the time behind the scenes. Many of them we're never supposed to even know about because they play around with these ideas, and the good stuff rises to the top, and the other stuff, you know, maybe gets integrated in other projects, maybe just drops off entirely, and we were never meant to know about it. So, of course, it happens, and then we get our hopes up. We're like, well, I want to see this next big great thing, you know, next big direction for what I'm a fan of and what I love. We'll see the other things once they actually come to light. So, all right, we got an email, Ron.
We did get an email. Trevor writes in, and Trevor has to say, I am a 14-year-old who's aspiring to be an Android developer when I grow up. That's awesome, Trevor. Bravo. He says, I want to start learning now to prepare for the future. And with me being on summer break, this is the perfect time to do so. Also, Trevor, I commend you. You're spending your summer break similar to how I did, in front of a computer. Good job. So Trevor says, my question for you guys is, do you know of any tools or lesson programs to help me learn to code Android apps with Java or Kotlin? I may want to lean more towards Kotlin because everyone says it's simple code that can do complex things. Thank you guys for any help you can give me. So I've got some stuff, but I mean, Derek, since you've got the ties to MIT and things like that, do you have any advice for a 14-year-old who wants to learn Java or Kotlin? Do you know of any great sources?
I'll start with the first time I heard of Kotlin, I'm embarrassed to say, was when I was at IO and the announcement was made. I forget who was on stage at the time. But she announced that Kotlin was now being supported in Android Studio. And the eruption from the developers was probably how it'll sound in Oracle Arena if the Warriors win the finals. I mean, they were just like super pumped. So after that, I took some time and kind of asked around. And I would definitely encourage your reader to explore Kotlin. I don't have... necessarily like a bunch of tools off the top of my head to offer, but once I talked to more developers after that announcement to find out what was going on, because I, like all the other press members, had a blank stare on our face when the announcement came up.
Similar for me, like when the combination of the announcement in I.O. and then the conversation, Jason, that you and Flo had at Google I.O., I've heard of Kotlin beforehand, but I didn't really dig deep into it. And then I spent those days kind of digging deep into it and kind of uncovered what the potential of it was. And it got a proper context of how it's kind of the next evolution of Java and really an advancement. So I think it's awesome. So, Trevor, I did some research for you. First off, you could, you know, if you just Google, I hate to say it, but if you just go to Google and type in Kotlin tutorial, there's a bunch of stuff that is out there that you can find some free kind of resources. In fact, I found an article on Medium by a guy by the name of what's his name here? I want to get it right.
Juan Ignacio Saravia.
Yeah, Juan Ignacio Saravia. Wrote from Argentina. He wrote a whole thing on Medium, which is using Kedit. How to learn Kotlin with Kedit, and it's a whole kind of breakdown of how to use this app, how to learn specifically around learning Kotlin in the context of developing an Android app. So that might, you know, that might be really good. It might, I don't know how what level you're at there, Trevor, but this is, you know, there's a bunch of stuff out there like this that is free, whether it's on Medium or on other websites. But if you want to do a focused kind of course, there's a couple of options for you. One is over at Treehouse, which is a great online learning tool for web development. And they have amazing videos that go along with actual code exercises. I've taken their classes. I took a couple on Python and SQL through Treehouse, and they're awesome. You go at your own pace. You watch the video, then you do a code example, then you take a test, et cetera, and you go along. That does come at a cost, though. I forget the cost. I forget how much it costs for Treehouse. I think it's a matter of well, there is a free trial, so you can check it out. But yeah, but then when you sign up, $25 a month. And you get access to all their stuff. You can learn a bunch of things there. So Treehouse is awesome. I actually know the guy who started the company, and Ryan Carson, he's really, really cool. And he's really big on, you know, people learning to become like coding as a skill, not a, I forget what his term is, that we should have apprenticeships. He's really about, you know, you don't need to go to college to become a coder. You can take these classes and be, you know, hit the ground running. Also Udemy, Udemy, they've got some online courses, and they actually, Trevor, if you're watching now or in the next 3 days left, they have a crazy sale going on, which, yeah, I don't know if it's related to Google or not or why they're doing it, but you can get, they have Kotlin for beginners, learn programming with Kotlin, and you can get this for $10, which is 89% off the price, and it's only available for the next 3 days. So if you're going to do it, sign up for it now and check it out. There's a bunch of different options. It's really cool. Now, Trevor, I don't know if you have a job or you're 14. I don't know what your deal is. If you can't afford either Treehouse or Udemy, email me and I'll pay for it as long as you finish the course. Okay? Because you want to learn this stuff, so I want to help you learn this stuff. So, Trevor, get in touch. We'll make sure you take one of this stuff. And this summer, at the end of the summer, I want to see some certification that you know Colin. So there you go. There's my challenge.
Wow.
The Ronixo Summer Programming Challenge right there.
But if you're going to do the Udemy thing, do it now, because then it's $10 for Ron and not $95.
Even if it's $95, dude. I mean, please try to do it at $10. Or if you want to do Treehouse for $25 a month. But yeah, email us at aa@twit.tv, and that'll get forwarded to me, and we'll figure it out, Trevor. My biggest regret at your age was not sticking with programming. And I wish I had stuck with it at your age. So definitely I encourage you to do it. So that's my challenge to you this summer.
And now more than ever, I mean, you know these skills, and you start learning them early. And man, the sky's the limit.
So
you've got a career for life. Fantastic stuff. That's really nice of you, Ron, to do that. Yeah. I wish I had thought to do that. But Ron is a better man than I am.
No, it's just fun. I just wish somebody had challenged me a little at that age.
Yeah, totally.
Absolutely. You know, and especially also, we say the tools that we have now, I had back in the late 80s, early 90s, when I was at that point and was trying to, you know, I learned Pascal in a stuffy classroom with a boring, you know, like it was just such not an environment to learn in. And now we've got so much great stuff that we can learn, you know, that you know, there's no reason not to. So,
Oh, it's crazy, the tools that we have nowadays. You can learn anything you really want to, even with just access to YouTube. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break, and then we'll talk about some hardware. We're going to thank the sponsor of today's episode, and that is LegalZoom. I am a fan. I'm a user of LegalZoom. I've been with them for years, and they do a whole lot of stuff, a bunch of stuff, whether for business owners or for personal, your family, all this sort of stuff. In order to successfully run your own business, for example, you need attention to detail. It's so critical. One contract slip up or legal misunderstanding can set you back. Fortunately, there's LegalZoom. They can help you out with that. You may already know that over 1 million Americans have used LegalZoom to start their businesses, but LegalZoom services go well beyond business formation. They built a nationwide network of independent attorneys who can provide legal answers to the day-to-day questions that you might have about your business. Because let's face it, things like trademarks, and just ask essential, employment laws, and lease agreements can be very complicated. So don't waste your valuable time trying to wrap your head around all of the fine print. Use LegalZoom for that so you can focus on the really important stuff for you, that's growing your business. You'll get the legal help that you need without being billed by the hour, since LegalZoom is not a law firm. Go to LegalZoom.com today, and this is important, be sure to enter code AAA in the referral box for special savings, only at LegalZoom.com. That's LegalZoom.com, and then use the code AAA, and There you go. Special savings. We thank LegalZoom for their support. All right, it's time to jump into a little, to try some hardware on for size. Motorola had an announcement. They announced the Moto Z2 Play handset. And it's kind of a mid-ranger, but still follows down the path of Moto's, you know, previous iteration of this device that allows for the Moto mods. It's $499, 5.5-inch Super AMOLED 1080p display, Qualcomm Snapdragon 626 processor, 3 to 4 gigs of RAM, depending on your configuration, 12-megapixel rear-facing camera, Android Nougat on board. The battery does take a little bit of a dip down to 3,000 milliamp hours, but that makes it also a little bit slimmer, if that's your cup of tea. And like I said, Moto Mods. So, and this is actually pretty interesting. That we've wondered how, in the modular world with things like Moto Mods, how frequently new Moto Mods would be added in this case. And they announced a bunch of them. The JBL Sound Boost 2, which is the sequel to the previous Sound Boost. Doesn't really improve the sound necessarily, but it, you know, makes a more compact design, rounded corners. Probably going to sell this in place of the other one for $79.99. Moto Turbo Pack, or Turbo Power Pack, sorry, for an additional 3290 milliamp hour battery that can charge the phone using 15 watt fast charge. You just snap that on and it starts charging your phone. That's $79.99. And you can recharge that with USB-C. Moto style shells, which include wireless charging for $39.99. That adds Qi and PMA wireless charging to your device if that's what you want. All that comes in July. But I thought this one was the really interesting one. It almost looks like a Nintendo Switch. It's a prototype at this point. It's the Moto Gamepad. They expect it to cost $79.99. You know, it basically turns your phone into a handheld gaming device with analog sticks on both sides, digital controllers, buttons on the front and the rear, and games optimized for it. That doesn't have a release date yet. Where do you fall, Derek, on the idea of the next mobile wave being around this modular functionality? And do you think Motorola is doing taking the right approach with it?
I really like it. The good people at Motorola allowed me to try the Moto Z when it came out. I think it was called the Z Droid, and then a whole batch of the modules. And the camera especially was really neat because it gave you like actual zoom as opposed to just you know, the fake digital zoom when you slapped it onto the back. And so I took it on a vacation, and it was neat to like actually zoom in on things and have a more functional camera.
The Hasselblad, that was the Hasselblad camera,
yeah,
right?
Yes, that's right. Yes. Right. And then the projector was super cool. I mean, it was a great party trick, nothing else. It was just really expensive. And the, you know, so from my perspective, as someone who loves this stuff, I think the game controller thing is great. I'd love to have that. The question is how mainstream will this go? Right. It seems like they've had a bit of a struggle in getting some third party manufacturers to jump on board. They had like a competition developer challenge in the last year to try and get some more going with their program. It's just a matter of getting more consumers to think, yes, this is something I want to do along with buying my phone. Do I also want these add-ons that are going to cost extra money? Do I want to haul them around with me? People are used to buying battery packs. It's the other items that, from their perspective, is probably the marketing challenge at this point.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not just Motorola that's doing this. Actually, Essential is a prime example. They're kind of basing their business with their devices, not just their smartphones, but also even the home device, to all interoperate with this kind of modular ecosystem that they're creating. It's all going to be interchangeable, and their approach is, anytime you get any of our devices going forward, those modules that you have will work on future devices. So it's not like locked, you know, tied to those old devices. And I wonder, is Motorola, do either of you know if Motorola is actually taking that approach as well? I mean, right now, so far, it seems like the Moto Mods are all interchangeable between the devices that support it. I just don't know if that's their long-term plan or if they've even made any comments.
I think it's got to be. I mean, the problem is that if they make any changes to the, you know, to the bezel or to the actual size and shape of the phone, then how well do they link up and that sort of thing? But my imagine would be that the mods could potentially outlive the phones. Like, if I remember the first wave of this was that you bought the speaker one and it will work on any of them, right? I mean, wasn't that the whole point of it?
Yeah.
So I would imagine they've got to be thinking long term, but that's probably going to limit them in their ability to iterate on future phones in terms of the shape and size. But that said, I wish we lived in a world where there was less choice of phones, because, you know, however many years ago, I probably would have been all over this, right, Jason? Like, yeah. I love this. I love the Moto Mods kind of concept. I just don't have the need to get a Motorola phone and dive right into that infrastructure. But a part of me is very curious and wishes I was more interested in it. So, no.
Well, and it's not that you're not interested in the modular approach or won't have access to it, because it sounds like, at least based on what you said last week, the Essential Phone is your next phone.
Yeah,
I suppose, you know, anything can change between now and the time the phone releases. But once you get the Essential Phone, you have the ability to go modular. You know,
I've got Pogo pins. Yeah, but they're not the same though, right?
It's not
because
the same.
those are just power, right? Yeah. So they're not actually data transfers, but still, it's a step in that direction.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, yeah, it's different in how it gets data from one part of, you know, from the module into the phone itself, but the idea is perfectly in tune. I mean, it expands the functionality of your phone in a predetermined kind of design just for that device sort of way. So, I mean, from the user perspective, it's the same. It's just the data transfer is different. So
I just love them. I love the modular aspect of it. Anybody who's trying to innovate in the hardware, I'm all about. So, but you know, I was talking about how there's so much choice in the phone, in the world of phones. And as Derek mentioned earlier, there's been a lot of buzz and hubbub around the OnePlus 5. And now we're finally seeing some renders and we've got a date. So June 20th, there'll be a live launch event for the OnePlus 5. And Android Police had a leaked render of the phone, so you can get a sense of what it looks like there. It shows a dual camera on the back. The design of it is very iPhone-esque, and it's got the trademark OnePlus mute switch on the side, and the leak says that it's running Snapdragon 835. And so, Derek, I tracked down your Tom's Guide article about what OnePlus 5 needs to do to beat its rivals. Now that this leak has come out, how does this shape up compared to what your kind of, not predictions, but your kind of your gauntlet thrown down at OnePlus looks like?
I wish I would have written, make sure it doesn't look like an iPhone, because I feel there's already too much of that out there. But it is what it is at this point. I'm curious. One of the things I wrote was that I'm curious about the price, because as they've iterated on successive models, the price has kind of continued to creep up to where it started as this really super cheap budget phone, and now it's a budget phone, kind of a mid-range price. So given that this phone definitely looks expensive, it looks really compelling. So I'm curious to see where they end up price-wise. But in terms of like how the company's come along, I think they've done a really good job with building a phone that looks great and is something that someone would want to buy.
Yeah, OnePlus has navigated some really rough waters over the past, you know, since its launch. And it really seems like in the past, I don't know, year and a half, the conversation has definitely been drawn further, which needed to happen, further away from how it does business into just focusing on creating devices that make make the owners happy. And that might not be a household name at this point, but I have a feeling that what they're doing right now is they're continuing to kind of, I don't know, improve their capability around producing good phones, and that maybe someday that leads to the point to where they can compete even on the higher end, and, you know, potentially maybe at some point move these things into carrier stores in the U.S. because we know how important that is. It seems they're on the right track. They, you know, consistently they put out these phones that, I mean, they feel, just from a design and from a aesthetic standpoint, they are more expensive than what you paid for them. They still are such a great value for what you get. But yeah, you're right. That price is starting to creep up. It's not like it's outside of the what the phone is worth, though, because they're really nice phones. So
I see it as kind of a earlier we were talking about spiritual successors. I see this as kind of a spiritual successor to the Nexus line, because the Nexus phones, obviously, you know, their main advantage was they were built in collaboration with Google, so you didn't have any of the junkware or anything, but you had a stock build of Android, but also the price was really good. The hardware was seemingly overachieving for the price. And if OnePlus can hit that point, I think they'll have a really really strong fan base, because there are still a lot of people out there who are looking for a really good phone, but they don't necessarily want it to cost $700-$900.
Yeah. Tom's Guide, I think you linked to it in your article that the OnePlus 3T last year was named the best, the best rated kind of phone of its class on Tom's Guide.
Yeah, I think the Tom's Guide gave it the title for either best budget phone or best mid-range phone. So it
best unlocked phone. That's what it was. Best unlocked phone for the
okay,
money.
Okay. Yes. Anyway, yeah, it's not all startups and companies grow up and find success, and so I give them credit for doing that.
Especially considering the issues they had early on. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Sure. It's very.
I just recommended the OnePlus 3T to a friend of mine who was asking for a phone recommendation for his wife, you know, not needing the Pixel or the Essential or the high-end kind of phone, just wants a solid phone with a good camera. And I was like, give him options. I'm like, you know, the OnePlus 3T is pretty solid for what, you know, what her needs are. Like, that's a good phone.
Yeah.
So,
You can do a lot worse, and you won't find a whole lot better, especially in the price category. That's they're doing good things. So I'm very curious to see the 5. It does look a little close to the Apple iPhone, but hey, imitation's the highest form of flattery, I suppose.
Hey, it's either iPhone lookalike or anonymous HTC China phone kind of style, you know, been like that for years. So I'm not surprised they're swinging in this direction.
Yep,
But so our next story, Jason, is weird because I literally was just talking about Amazon's smartphones. In fact, I texted you and Flo a couple of days ago with a quick quiz about what year did the Amazon Fire Phone come out, because I was shocked that it was as recent as it was. I had put the Amazon Fire Phone like at 2011 or so, and that was like 2014, 2015. So I can't believe – it feels like a lifetime ago.
Lots happened since then, Ron. We've been through a lot of phones on this show. I thought it was interesting. You sent that out, and then like a day or two later, this news broke that a new Amazon Fire Phone is apparently in the works. It's dubbed, at least internally for now, as Ice. So, you know, like walking far away from the Fire Phone with – the polar opposite, targeting low end market in emerging markets, for example, India. In this case, the sources are saying around $93 when you convert it from Indian rupees. But what's weird about the sources on this and what they're saying about this next go for Amazon is that it will have Google Mobile Services, GMS support. So that's the Play Store. That's Google's suite of apps that you find on, you know, all of the kind of official Google phones and, you know, phone makers like this is the ZTE Axon 7 that have the Play Store and all of their apps that are required to go on if you include the Play Store. There's a number of requirements and agreements that OEMs have to agree to in order to bring that suite of apps and services onto the device. Amazon in the past, at least with the Fire Phone and definitely with the Fire tablets, has kept things really focused on Amazon's app store and their own services, because they've got stuff to sell. They've got reasons that they create these things, which is to sell people product. But in this case, they'd be opening it up. Why do you think they would be doing that? Do either of you have any ideas?
Well, they want to sell phones, and doing it with just Amazon's operating system on the Fire Phone didn't work. And so it's a worthy compromise. Put a version of Android on it that has Google Mobile services and get more devices out there. I feel like most buyers now understand that a phone is either an iPhone or an Android phone. That's why Samsung hasn't been able to ditch Android and go with Tizen. Mm-hmm. So it's probably a practical move for Amazon. It allows them to sell phones. They've been selling Android phones for a little while. They have, I think, a phone from Motorola and Blue, if I remember right, that they sell directly on Amazon. You can get one of those models that where it shows you, I think, the lock screen ads, and you take some off the price. So they've been kind of creeping in this direction for a while. This is probably just the next step. It'll make Google happy because the Google Play Store is on there, but I'm sure there's enough wiggle room in the agreement where they can also they'll also be able to, of course, have their Amazon App Store and all their own applications on there also.
And I think there's something to be said about the target audience for this phone being in emerging markets in India and things like that, where Amazon just doesn't have to deal with the infrastructure of that support.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe somebody finally did the realization that like if we leverage what Google has built, that's a whole aspect of the phone maintenance that we don't need to worry about. We can just say, hey, Google, take care of these users, you know, and then still sell to, you know, to Derek's point, still sell more phones. So I think that probably has a lot to do with it as well, too. It's not necessarily the audience, like the Amazon Fire phone was targeted at us being, being Amazon Prime customers and things like that. In these emerging markets and stuff like that in India, that all that stuff's out the window. They just want to get users.
Right. And there it's easy for us in kind of the Western markets to assume that Amazon has as much pull as it does here everywhere else. And in markets like India, it really does not. So this is definitely one way to make sure that Amazon appears, you know, in a cost effective way in front of a whole new market. And I'm sure Google would be very happy to have Amazon as a partner, finally, officially, in some way.
So. That's for sure. Maybe right. It's the start of a beautiful friendship, and that and especially now that after the Apple announcement earlier this week that Amazon will be on the Apple TV, maybe we can get Amazon Prime support with Chromecast on the Amazon Video app. So
hey, keep wishing for that. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. All right, hey, we've got I've got a wearable to talk about in hardware. I have right here the Huawei Watch 2. I'm not going to sing this review. You may have thought I was going to sing it, but I'm not going to. This is $299, the Huawei Watch 2. I think this you could call this like the sport edition if you wanted to. The Huawei Watch, someone corrected me and said it's not Huawei, it's Huawei.
Huawei,
that there is really important. The Huawei Watch. The first one was styled a little bit more, I don't know, classically, I would say. And I maybe liked the design of that one a little bit more than, it was a little bit more appealing to me than this Huawei Watch 2. This is more like a sporty version. There's also a classic version that you can get for $369. That changes the design somewhat, but it doesn't go full on, full predecessor, if that makes sense. It's still kind of tied into this little sport aesthetic, but I've been playing around with this for, I don't know, about a week and a half. You can see there's no digital crown on the side. There's a couple of shortcut buttons that will take you to either into the sport capability. There we go. Or into app launcher, which you can see here. I kind of like when, once I've used some of these Android Wear devices with a digital crown, I kind of like navigating some of these menus with it. You don't have that here, but, that's neither here nor there. This ring is made of ceramic. It does not rotate. So it's just numbers on a ring that you just look at. So it's not usable for divers, let's say, although I never use those rings anyways. So I guess, it doesn't matter as much. This particular model has NFC, so you can use it for mobile payments, GPS, Bluetooth, heart rate monitor underneath, of course, a speaker if you want to make calls, although this model doesn't have the SIM card slot, but I believe that you can get one that does. And I will say this. When I first got it, I was bummed by the design because I really liked the original Huawei Watch's design. And I thought this was such a big turn. Like, it's like, take this classic design and now we're going sporty with it. This is our sequel. It's sporty. Hope you like sporty. And that's not going to appeal to some people. Over time, though, I've actually gotten quite used to it. And there's a couple of really outstanding things about this watch that I've grown to really like a lot. Number one, I don't know. It's kind of hard to show off here, and it works on my wrist. It probably won't work on other people, on some other people's wrists, but it feels like the design is a little bit tighter, a little bit shallower, so it gets closer to a normal watch. It's still smartwatch depth, you know what I mean? But it's, when I compare it to some of the other watches that I've used, it's shallower and it's also a lot lighter. You forget that you're wearing a watch. I would say it's, the comfort level on this watch is actually really high. Yeah, and Sean in chat is like, whoa, that is thick. Yeah, this is smartwatch territory. Like, it's thick, but smartwatches, at least in the Android Wear world, tend to be a little bit thicker. But when you're seeing it in real life and it's on your wrist and you kind of get accustomed to it, it's not that much thicker than a lot of watches of this kind of design aesthetic. But I think the real strong selling point on the Huawei Watch 2 is battery. And the reason for that is because I don't even have the milliamp hours on the battery, but that's kind of not the point. I charged this on Friday morning. It was fully charged. I took it off the charger. I made it through Sunday before it hit what is called watch mode. And what happens is on watch mode, it changes entirely. So it recognizes that it's low on battery and it changes the functionality. So all you get is time and step counting. And it doesn't show it all the time. You know what I mean? Like, you have to go like the, you have to rotate your wrist in order to get the time to appear. That extended it all the way through this morning. So I charged this sucker on Friday morning. It was fully charged and it was still rocking as of this morning. That's Tuesday morning, where I had to charge it to show it off on this show and to do a review for new screensavers. So if you, what you want is an Android Wear device that actually has battery in mind, this might be the best bet as far as that's concerned. Sure, you don't get all of the smart watch functionality of like syncing notifications when it goes into that watch mode, but it keeps it from being a dead weight on your wrist. It actually makes it usable and for days later. I thought that was really impressive. So I've got a full review of this coming up on this weekend's new screensavers. But I think there's some good stuff to be had here. I'm just not entirely sold on the design, I think, compared to the Huawei Watch 1. And I don't know. Appealing to either of you with smartwatches, Derek? Do you have the
Huawei Watch 1. So
Oh, you have the first one.
Nice. I do have the first one. Yes. I still really like it. I get a lot of compliments about it all the time. I hear from people that are like, whoa, that's a smartwatch. That looks great. That looks so much better than an Apple Watch. Because I think a lot of people still really like, and I do too, that round watch style mm-hmm. look. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty happy with it. But I've heard similar things with the second edition to what you said. So I'm not sure where I'll go when it comes to time for a new one.
Yeah, like, and I mean, the band is a little, I don't know, I'm not a big fan of the band. It's kind of cheap feeling and looking, to be honest. But you can change it. Like, I can show you, it's very easy to change the bands. So at least there's that. There's these little pull switches right there. So I can just go like that and pop it off and put something else on. So at least you have the ability to kind of play around with it a little bit, and that might improve it. But you're never going to get rid of this kind of like sportier looking watch face. So you've got to be okay with that going in.
Yeah, it very much looks like something that you're going to wear when you go scuba diving. So if that's not the look that you're going for, then probably go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's also an aesthetic that some people like. I
Absolutely.
Mean, that's not uncommon amongst watches. So, like, I can't necessarily say that it's an aesthetic I want or that I would pursue, but I know that some people are there. I'm just more fascinated that there's actually a phone and hardware manufacturer still making smartwatches. We've been talking about how they've all been getting out.
Yeah.
So, you know, the fact that Huawei is holding on to their watch. You know, yeah, it's good for them, I guess, if they see it's viable. You know, but the wearable market is just real quiet.
Yeah, you're seeing a lot more fashion brands kind of doing it. Apple, of course, is dominating when you take a look at numbers. And Fitbit, you know, used to be at the top. They just news last week, or I think early this week, that they just dropped from first to third. Xiaomi and Apple are now dominating the smartwatch/wearables market. I don't know what that says about the market. Meanwhile, it grew, I think, 25. It actually grew pretty decently last year. And I think that's probably partially because Apple Watch has been so strong suddenly. So, yeah. Anyways, so full review, new screensavers coming up this weekend. So check that out. Before we move on, Let's thank the sponsor of today's episode. That's Blue Apron. This is the part of the show where we all get hungry because we didn't eat before the show. And so to punish ourselves for not eating, I'm going to talk about Blue Apron and we're going to get even hungrier. And I apologize about that, but we got to talk about it because it's awesome. Not all ingredients are created equal. Fresh, high quality ingredients make a real difference. So it's important to know where your food comes from. Blue Apron sets the highest quality standards for their community of over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranches across the U.S. For less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals in 40 minutes or less. You get the Blue Apron box at your door. It's stocked with all the stuff you need to make these recipes, and it's just a great way to learn, even if you haven't cooked before or you're learning, you want to get better at cooking. It's like a food school, in a box. And they ship the exact amount of each ingredient required for recipe, so Blue Apron's reducing food waste. The freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook, or they're going to make it right for you. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. They deliver to 99% of the continental U.S. There's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. And you can log in, you can kind of check out the recipes, customize them every week based on your dietary preferences if you need to. You can choose from a variety of new recipes that they post every single week. Or if you want to, you can just let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you with what they want to put in the box for you. So just a few meals that are coming up. So this is the part where you get hungry. Warm smoked trout and asparagus salad with fingerling potatoes and garlic croutons. That sounds really good. Spiced zucchini enchiladas with creamy lime and tomato rice elote style vegetable tostadas with summer squash, poblano peppers, and cilantro rice, or peach honey glazed chicken with mashed sweet potatoes, collard greens, and Thai basil. I should say and, because you could get all four of those in your box. Check out this week's menu and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/allaboutandroid. Check it out for yourself and see how awesome it is. You're going to love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. Don't wait. Go to blueapron.com/allaboutandroid. Blue Apron is a better way to cook, and I have a Blue Apron box waiting for me on my doorstep at home. Probably not waiting anymore because my family got home, but so it's in our fridge at this point. But we've got a few meals this week to look forward to. So thank you to Blue Apron for that. All right. It's time for a few apps. A steady diet of apps.
Nice. That's my favorite Fugazi record.
Yes.
Steady Diet of Apps from 1989. So I got to say, I'm impressed by there are certain applications that are out there that have a rabid, loyal user base, and Waze is absolutely one of them, right? People who use someone using Waze, I'm like, oh, I just use Google Maps, and they like suck air and like, you don't use Waze? Like, you got to use Waze and all that stuff. So it was interesting to see that thread pop up in Reddit that Android Auto users who've been wanted Waze access in Android Auto that when it wasn't supported, they finally have a Waze beta track, and they're finally going to be able to get some of that functionality. Some Reddit users of Android Auto have already got it. They say that certain voice commands don't quite work yet, like report accident, send ETA, stop navigation, that sort of thing. But the hazard notification is working, and you must receive and accept the terms before testing. So if you're an Android Auto user and a Waze user, you want to navigate your way to get on that beta track, and your dreams will come true. So there you go.
Nice. I mean, it's a match made in heaven. It's surprising it's taken this long. But hey, I'm not making apps. So I don't know how complicated it actually is.
Maybe Trevor is going to make the next Waze competitor. Yeah, so we'll see.
It could happen. Android Auto, Derek, have you lived with it at all or had the chance to check out it on your phone, or what do you think?
Yes, I really like it. I have a car that just recently got the capability for Android Auto, so I definitely want to check it out on the car. Before that, I've been just doing it on the phone, which I thought was a really smart move that now you can have Android Auto just on your phone, get one of those devices that attaches to the air vent, and you can Android Auto your way around town. But like Ron was saying, Waze is a natural spot for this here, because now whenever I'm probably one of those people he was talking about, whenever I travel any sort of long distance now, I use Waze just because of the information it gives you about upcoming accidents or issues on the road or closures, the way it navigates you. So having this always available interface in the car, which is the vision of Android Auto, it connects very well with Waze. So I'm, like you said, I'm glad it's finally here, even though whatever issues they had to work out to make it happen.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Google Maps obviously has its own kind of rerouting approach. Waze is a little more aggressive. So if you like to get, you know, you like your navigation to get a little more creative with like avoiding traffic and everything, Waze is really good for that. Though it sounds like it's missing some, you know, somewhat critical in the long run voice commands for some of the other functionality of Waze, but they'll get there. So it's nice to see it right around the corner. Okay, so Microsoft, we talk about new Microsoft apps a decent amount, especially Microsoft Garage. They do some fun things. They do some interesting things. They're getting in on this whole face swap. They're jumping on the bandwagon with their own app called creatively called Face Swap. Now, I will admit, another face swap app, eyes roll, whatever. But they're actually doing something that's a little bit different here, which gives it a little bit of a fun slant. They're integrating it with Bing Image Search. So, Derek, I hope you don't mind. I went ahead and I took a picture of you, and I know this only sort of looks like you, but basically, so you can see here, that's the picture of you that I took. I could also just drop Ron in there. And there you go, Ron. Hey, this is me from earlier. Hold on, that's not me. That's me.
Not you.
So anyways.
That's a good look. Yeah.
And it basically, what it does is it searches Bing image search for images that kind of match the aesthetic of the face that you did. Or I don't know if it's matched perfectly or what it does. But they basically analyze the image that you take and pull back just a random assortment of Bing images that you can just place your face in. So, Derek, there you are as a lady. apparently, get off that overlay. You're a businessman now, so I hope you're okay with being a businessman, or you are high style. It's just kind of a fun kind of differentiator, right? Like when I've seen these face swap apps, it's usually like, take a picture of someone, now take a picture of another person, or two people in the same shot, and we'll just swap their faces. This is like, apparently now I'm an astronaut, or I'm this random guy leaning up against the wall. And they do, they pay attention to kind of the tilt of the head. They do skin tinting, so to kind of match the lighting, match skin color, a little bit of that as well. And I don't know, sometimes the results are actually really effective, and it's just kind of fun to play around with. I'm a nut for this stuff for whatever reason. I don't know what that says about me, but I just think it's hilarious.
I don't want to try to speculate that, but I will say that when I was looking for an app for the arena this week, I saw this and I thought about putting it in just to make your head explode. But I said, no, I can't do that. I can't do the face swap.
I'll do it for you, Ron. Oh, that's actually a really good one.
I appreciate that you had the worst possible facial expression for me.
I just took it while you were talking. I'm sorry. I could have waited and cued you for it. But hey, it's more fun this way. Anyways,
you love the I love your love of the face swap. It's really something special.
It just doesn't.
It's really fascinating.
It doesn't get old to me, and I don't know why. You'd think at this point it would get old to me, but for some reason it does not. But I had the hook of Microsoft, and we talk about Microsoft apps. So otherwise, I would have passed on it.
Sure.
There you go.
It's funny because everyone who watches in the chat room live is commenting on how we both have our kind of you, me, and Flo have our kind of wheelhouse apps. Face swapping is one of yours. I love crazy keyboards and launchers and things like that. But I also love TV watching apps and things related to media. And so when the news broke earlier, was it early this week or was it last week? I don't even remember. But big announcement from Plex, which is actually the home media app that I use on my desktop as well as for mobile. They big announcement that they're bringing live TV to its apps, and it's coming first to Android TV. And at first I went, huh? And it kind of perked up my ears because I recently just signed up for YouTube TV to get live TV. But you got to dig deep into this announcement to understand it. So basically, in Plex, their media server supports over-the-air TV natively, and now they're extending that to their client apps on Android TV. So what this means is that you do need a TV tuner. You do need an antenna in order to get over-the-air TV into Plex. It wasn't a live TV streaming service. Because I was like, how did they do that, right? But it's not that. Right. So basically, you could do this before with the web app. But now you can do it natively in the Plex app on Android TV. It does require to sign up for their Plex Pass service, which is worth it in my opinion. And it integrates Plex's metadata into the over-the-air information for artwork and associated information. And it also means that you can play with the Plex DVR without the web app, which is pretty big. And Chromecast support is coming soon for sending live TV from the Plex app on a phone to Chromecast to a TV or whatnot. So if you're already using the Plex DVR with an antenna over the air TV tuner or some sort of solution like that, now it's advancing a little more out to the apps. Very cool if you're a Plex user, but it is not like a YouTube TV situation. That's what I thought at first, and I got really excited because I would ditch YouTube TV for Plex in a second. But yeah, so there it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and someone in the chat room says RIP Aereo, and yeah, Aereo is never coming back. So yeah. I love Plex. Plex is great though. Plex is amazing. Nice. Yeah. All right, so let's thank our next sponsor and our final sponsor of the evening. We want to thank ZipRecruiter for sponsoring this episode of All About Android. And listen, are you in a job where you're hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? I've been working for a long, long time in tech. I've had the joy and the frustration of having to find good talent to fill out teams and to hire developers, designers, writers, that sort of thing. And finding the right people is always such a challenge. And ZipRecruiter makes it that much easier if you're in a position to hire. You can post your job listing to 100+ job sites with just one click. And let me tell you, if you were going through each one of these one at a time, you'd go crazy. Having ZipRecruiter is something that makes it that much easier and helps you find the best talent out there. Their powerful technology officially matches the right people to your job better than anyone else out there. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours, which is amazing. So no juggling emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates in all one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. So find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, you can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, totally free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/twit. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TWIT. And one more time, to try for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/twit. We thank them for their support and thank them for making it easier to fill the talent needs that you have in your jobs. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. Thanks again.
Thank you, ZipRecruiter. All right. I think it's time to get a little battle on in the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives.
In the arena! Okay, so let's see how our new little polling system held up over the week. We've kicked the tires. We've placed votes. Anyone game the system? No.
Unknown.
I guess unknown. Well, yeah. But you kind of had to know that the goat game was going to win. It always does when Mateo's
not
on.
Surprised.
Goat Simulator Payday wins with 61% of the vote. Second place, Magikarp Jump. 16%, that was Flo's app. Astro AI meets email at 13%. And Stealth Audio Player, that was my app, with 10% of the vote.
All right. And so what that does with the guests winning, the guests haven't won in a long time, and what that does to our standings, and thank you to Wade County in the chat room for managing the standings. Through 22 weeks of 2017, I'm still holding on the first place with 63 points, even coming in third. I got a couple of points there. See, it works. Jason, you came in last, so now you're still in second place with 60 points. But Flo is sneaking up behind you. She's in third place with 56 points, but she's not here, so she's not going to get any points this week. Uh-huh. Her loss. And the guests, who this week Derek is representing, is in last with 54 votes, 54 points. But that can all change after this week if one of us emerges as a winner, there could be a huge jump. In fact, Jason, you're in prime position to move into first place. So,
and maybe I will. Maybe I will with this app. So we're going to jump right into it. Sorry, I'm getting getting some props for my app.
Oh, we got props. Wow.
Well, in order to show it off, it kind of requires this. So first of all, I have to thank Ed for sending me this recommendation. It's actually pretty interesting. It's called Chameleon Color Adapting Live Wallpaper. So you can kind of see things are changing in the background a little bit. And what this does, it's probably not the most battery efficient app in the world, I'm guessing. But what it's doing is it's taking the information from the rear facing camera, the color information, the combinations of the things that it's picking up through the camera, and it's kind of warping, shifting the color based on, I'm thinking probably the averages of the things that it sees. So if I cover up the camera entirely, you would see blackness, for example. If I take my blue Pixel phone and put it in front of the camera, depending on the light and shadow, hey, what do you know? It chameleon it shifted colors to kind of match the tones of my phone. If I take my library card and put it in front, you get some interesting combinations. Oh, there we go. I'm trying to put it in front of the camera so you see. And, you know, shadows are going to throw it off and all that kind of stuff. It doesn't ever hang on a color forever. Like, you can't just say, accept this color for good going forward. It's always taking in the information from your environment. There's this rebounders card that I should have planned better props.
What is that, Noah? This is fascinating. What is the battery drain on that then? Yeah. If the camera's constantly on and doing something, right?
Well, the camera's, you know, pulling it in. I'm guessing it's probably, you know, it's probably worse than if you weren't running the app. I don't know what it is though. I honestly don't know. I'm sure it's not good for the battery life, but it's fun to play around with, and it's kind of cool. And also, when you interact with the background, it kind of does shifting of the design and everything like that.
That's
so
awesome.
If you're kind of swiping around, it takes those actions and does some really cool animations based on that color information. So I just thought it was a neat kind of neat idea. The idea that it's a chameleon wallpaper that takes the colors that surround you, that it's being pointed at, and changes things. Okay, so Wonder XJR is saying, check your settings, Jason, to see. Okay, so let me pull this away for a second, or I'll see if maybe I can get into battery settings and see if it's details how that is. And now I have to remember how to get into battery settings. Hold on. Do-to-do-to-do. Actually, you know what? I'll check in on that. Ron, tell me about your app.
Okay. So my app, and Brian, you can show off in the Google Play Store while I talk about it until Jason's ready to show it, if at all.
But okay, yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready. I can show it.
So essentially, you can go back to me, Brian, while I talk about it. So my app is called Fortune City, a finance app, and it kind of merges two things. One is a very dry, kind of boring topic, which is tracking finances, but the other is a game. I spend a lot of my time playing games that have to do with like building cities and managing and doing tasks and things like that. And I was looking for a new game and I found Fortune City, which actually does what I'm looking for in terms of like a grinder kind of working game. But the driving factor is your finances. So what you've got here is you've got this little city that you slowly build. You start off with these little blocks, and then every time you add an expense that you're tracking, you add something to your city, and it gets bigger and things are able to go. So like today, let's add a new record. Let's down at the bottom in the middle, you say new record. And let's say I spent, you know, on food, give the note, type in lunch. Just type in lunch. And so let's say I spent $15 on lunch, right? You can change that to there. And hit check. And now once I bought lunch, I added another thing to my city and it added another person. And these little people were walking around and you could tap the little envelope above that little dude that was there and now he's gone. Oh no. There was something going on there, but little things happen in your city. You can meet the different people that are there. Yeah. Hit her. So there you go. She just encountered Robin Hood on the road. It's come that her glasses had disappeared. So now we got to find Robin Hood. So you hit confirm. And that's a quest. We've got a mission. And so now we've got a, if you hit confirm there, you can I hit that and hit confirm. There you go. So now we got to find Robin Hood. And I think he's up there in the upper left-hand corner. You can try tapping. That's cashy. No, it's hard to see over through Skype. But one of these people is Robin Hood with his glasses. We're going to recover the glasses and we'll get a reward. There they are. So, and we got it. And now we can claim that a reward. And so now if you notice in the middle there, that building's got an arrow upgrade. So we can upgrade that building, hit that arrow. And so, you know, so now we can choose to either upgrade the finance, the economy, or the livelihood. We do finance. And so we upgraded it. And there we go. We got some more increased coin storage. It's basically like one of these build a city games, but it's completely driven through the actions you do in the game and your actual finances. So you can actually keep track of it. Actually, Brian, if you want to cut to the Google Play Store listing, it's probably easier to show in this kind of area because it's got actual more data than what we're doing in here. If you hit the second one, see where your money goes, you can get this view of once you're putting in more of your stuff, you can see how much you're spending on food and drink and housing and entertainment and things like that. And the app does something really interesting in that it turns on location awareness and it picks up based off of Google Map data to identify where you are. So if you're at a diner or you're at a restaurant and you open up the app to enter in the thing, it's going to detect that you're at a restaurant and suggest going, hey, are you at this place? To make it that much easier to enter your information in. So if you're going to have to track your expenses, might as well have fun doing it at the same time. And that's what Fortune City gives you. So there it is, a gamified financial tracker.
Nice. So. I love it. Yeah. I love the design of it and kind of the play.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's very, very cool, very cute, very cutesy. But yeah, I love those games where you build a city and manage it. And how better to do that than through my actual spending? So
yeah,
there it is.
No kidding. Whatever motivates you, right?
To exactly. It's free in the Google Play Store.
So. Nice. Fortune City. All right. To check back in, here is the app info screen for my app, Chameleon Color Adapting Live Wallpaper. It says 4% of my battery was used since last full charge. I probably pulled it off a charge, I don't know, at like 2 this afternoon. If you hop in here, CPU total 5 minutes, camera total 13 minutes, 20 seconds. That's because I haven't had this phone on for extended periods of time. So I'm sure it would, it's going to use your battery more than if you weren't using the app. There's no doubt about it. It's tapping into the camera. And so that's all there is to it. But there you go. For those of you that wanted to know, Bleak says that's bad for a wallpaper. Yes, that is true. Derek, I have your app installed. Why don't you tell us about it and I'll show it off.
Okay. Well, I went in a little different direction. The app I brought today is Todoist. And much to my wife's chagrin, I have always resisted making to-do lists and writing things down and doing what you actually are supposed to if you want to remember things. So I found a digital tool that would actually help me with that. Especially, there was much weeping and gnashing of teeth when Microsoft announced that it was going to get rid of Wunderlist and move it to Microsoft To Do. I thought, you know, this would be a good one to really present and bring into the show because it does a few things. It has a lot of smart tools in there that'll help you, like, auto-suggest how to fill out a to-do item. You can flag them. You can categorize things if you're for example, being a freelancer, a lot of things have different priorities or you want to put them in different projects. So it helps you organize things that you need to get done so that way it's just not one long infinite scroll. As you see there, you can assign a to-do date. There are some collaboration features. If you have a team, you can put it off until next week or whatever else you think that you actually need to get it done. It also has a little bit of gamification built in where you increase a karma score over time. So the more you actually do things, then you can see your little points go up. You won't be able to demonstrate this, but it also has pretty deep integration with the Google ecosystem. You can talk to the Google Assistant. You can ask to talk to Todoist, and it will add items to your to-do list. It integrates with Google Calendar, so it's really ideal for Android users and those who live a Google-heavy life.
It's funny because I was affected by the Wunderlist disaster, as we call it, and I actually settled on Todoist as well. This is the one that I've been using since Wunderlist, and it's pretty darn good. Those folks did a good job on it. So, and they just recently announced Google Calendar integration is awesome. Makes it even that much more powerful. So,
yeah, and it's good to see a company that came out and said that we're not looking to get acquired. We want to stay independent. They've been around, I think, for like almost 10 years. Yep. It's worth it to get the premium upgrade. It's just a little under little under $30 a year. If you could, if you're not that heavy of a user, you can probably get by on just the free plan, but it's definitely worth it. And they are also one of those companies that doesn't think iOS first, Mac first, and the Android version's kind of an afterthought. It integrates with Android Wear, looks great on Android, so I'm really happy with it.
Nice. Todoist.
Very cool.
Or how I always want to say it when I look at it, Todoist.
Todoist.
Todoist. Because it's all one word. So it's time for you to place your vote in our fancy new / old voting system, because we're back on straw poll. Go to bit.ly/AAApoll321 to place your vote. Is your favorite app the chameleon color adapting live wallpaper? Is it Fortune City, or is it Todoist/Todoist? Place your vote. And yeah, there's a captcha on there. I don't know.
Oh wow, Brian, you're too kind.
Oh,
thank
hey.
You.
It knew that you weren't. That you weren't.
Oh, you've already voted, though. Oh.
Oh, hey, look at that. We'll see where this. We never know early on where it's going to end up, because the early votes mean nothing. So we will see. Todoist gets a vote. Fortune City and Chameleon, a couple, and that's going to change a lot over time. So we'll see where that heads. But that, as they say, is that. And Derek, really appreciate you coming on tonight. It's been too long that we delayed getting you on before. So we're really happy you were able to join us tonight. Thank you.
Yeah, great to be here. And next time I will definitely eat dinner before the show, because that Blue Apron commercial pretty much killed me.
I'm sorry. Yeah, it does that to me every single week. Every single week I tell myself I need to eat before the show. I just never have time. Derek Walter, at Derek Walter on Twitter. And then where do you want people to go to find all the work? You're a busy guy. Where do you want them to find that?
You can just head to my website, derekwalter.com. I keep it pretty up to date with all the latest that I have from Android and other places in the tech world.
Right on. Keep up the great work, and we really appreciate it. And we'd love to have you back again sometime. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Ron, what you working on? What's news in the Ronxo world?
Working lots of things. Follow me on Twitter at RonXO. That's where, if I'm doing anything of import, I'll tweet about it there. But yeah, check out my other podcasts over at Damn Fine Podcast, where me and Tom Merritt are watching the new episodes of Twin Peaks and talking to really cool people about it. Having a great time doing it. If you're watching Twin Peaks, we hope you join us for the wonderful adventure that we're in this summer of Twin Peaks The Return, also known as Season 3. And additionally, go ahead over to ifanboy.com, where we're talking about comic books and comic book movies and TV shows and all that great stuff on a weekly basis. And we just reviewed Wonder Woman, which came out this past weekend, which was awesome. I definitely encourage everybody to go see it, then listen to our podcast about Wonder Woman. Good times. So yeah, follow me at Twitter, RonXO. And I just love talking to Android every week with you, Jason. It just makes me so happy.
Me too. It's a lot of fun. Thank you, Ron. It's always a pleasure. What about you, Brian?
The usual know-how on Thursdays with Padre. Although he's going on, yeah, it's a little dark over here.
Yeah, I can hardly see you.
It's too bright to turn on the lights. I have to start squinting and stuff. But Padre's actually going away for a couple months, so it's going to be me and Nate doing a few episodes. So stay tuned for that. It should be a lot of fun. And actually, my Raspberry Pi project came up on the new screensavers over the weekend. So if you want to watch how to do your own MAME machine on the Raspberry Pi, check that out.
Nice. And I encourage that you do, because it's a lot of fun.
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you, Brian. You can find me at jasonhowell.net or yellowgoldmusic.com. Don't forget, we have a newsletter here at Twit, and it's actually really awesome every week. We send you information about what's coming up on the network, what we've done in the past, and I don't know. It's just a great way to kind of stay up to date on what we're up to. twit.tv/newsletter if you want to check that out. But that is it for this week. If you want to leave us a voicemail, you can do that. 347-SHOW-AAA. If you want to send us an email or a video mail, you can do that. AAA@twit.tv. If you want to find us on Twitter, you can do that. It's at Android Show. If you want to find us on Reddit, upvote something in our subreddit, you can do that. It's twitaaa.reddit.com. You can also find our show notes and past episodes at twit.tv/AAA by entering that into your browser. You can find our episodes on YouTube, iTunes, Pocket Casts, everywhere podcasts are found. And you can catch us live every Tuesday at 5:30 p.m. Pacific at twit.tv/live. That's it for this week. We'll all see you next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, everybody.